And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're on the love bus, undefeated on the love bus, except for that one more seal, one more wire, one more connection, one more thing.
At least not another catastrophe on the side of the road.
At least not another catastrophe. We had semi-catastrophe. It turned out to be good. We picked it up, and we went to, we just took it straight from the diesel, went through all the stuff, and we took it to an RV merchant thing to get a little door that Taryn Lupo needed for his RV that Donna ordered for him. And, you know, it's been like a month and it wasn't there. And I'm like, what? Did you guys really order it? So anyway, we're working on that. And then we went to turn around. We had to find a place. You got the bus. You know, so we went around the service station, go around, there's a drain area, a little ditch and so on. It's kind of steep, but I was wanting to see if it'd pull it up. You know, I was like, all right, let's see what we got here. You know, let's make it go where. Boom, the hitch got, you know, scraped, you know, a little bit. So I stopped, and I backed up. Well, we learned something about the bus. There is an automatic, manual, anyway, leveling things for the airbags. If it thinks it's getting too low, it'll extend the airbag, goes up and down to keep it level. Well, it had this ditch that it was in, so it thought it was, you know, too low, so it let it out, you know, to have it come back, which was the worst thing to do because it set the bumper, you know, on the hill, you know. So it just kind of dug in there, and it said, it ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, we were high-centered, and the wheels were spinning, not even touching the pavement.
So we're going to the bumper, and I'm going, how the hell did it do this? Okay, well, Jay, fortunately, was close by. Jay knows everything. So Jay, Shallon, and Cypress came up, and he went in there and took off a couple of bolts so that it would, the actuator would fill the airbag, and it just lifted itself up. And I go, this is a switch that we need to install.
Yes.
This is an actuator we need to, there is science and physics for that. I want a button. But then what we found out is that, you know, even though it's not originally made for that, when you park and it's at an angle, they have all these billion-dollar levelers. And I go, a couple of actuators, we could do that. You know, how much are these actuators, you think?
Yeah, I bet you could probably
the entire
do
bus.
What you need to do, probably less than $200.
For $200 as opposed to, like, I don't know, billions, thousands of dollars for this. For a couple of $100, we could have, you know, and I know Donna would dig that. You pull in, boom, and you're flat, you're level. So I'm going, okay, so that was good. The other thing is there was one seal that we did. It's called the pinion seal. It goes from the drive shaft of the engine to the axle, that big bell that's between the main drive tires, and it was leaking oil. And the guy goes, yeah, you got a little pinion oil seal leak. Well, we put a new one in there, maybe whatever. It got up on an angle like that, it was pouring out, and it was just wasn't seated right, so we have to get another seal that Jay's doing today, tomorrow, so I got to be here another day, you know, to redo that seal again so that it does leak. But who loves us? The Lord! The Lord! It's a God thing. You know, if we hadn't had that, we wouldn't have saw all this stuff.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I've been out in the Lone Prairie with a destroyed axle for $15 billion.
There was the silver lining to the oily cloud.
right. The oily cloud. Well, so it all, we're fine. It's just, it's just starting to get cold and it's raining and, oh, my God. It's just like, I'm like deja vu back last year we started this thing. it's like, oh, my God. So this is, so we're on it, man. We're on it.
Yeah. You get it fixed, you'll drive out probably, and Jay's going to put a sign up, no buses allowed.
Right. No, well, he's got 1,400 buses in here. We're fine. It's just, and Bob Anderson came up. He was visiting Massachusetts where he has his childhood home there that he's renting out. And he had tenants move out, and he had to take care of business, and he flew out here so he can hang and help a little bit. And then, he's like, man, I need a house sitter now to do something. So we worked that out with someone from the community here.
Yeah.
But
so I think it's going to work fine. I think it's going to be a good fit.
So I go, I know who you need to talk to. And then, boom, it's working out. So everything's all good. It just keeps dragging it out. I tell you my biggest concern, snow. I do not want to be driving to Washington State in the freaking winter. It's getting to where.
Yeah, I think you've already passed that. You're over the Rubicon on that
this
one.
This is not good. I may go the southern route. But so we'll get. Well, it hasn't snowed yet anywhere that I know of, except Denver.
Denver.
Freaking snowed in the summer, I think it was.
I-70, that's where you're going across, Denver.
Is it really?
I think so. I think it goes through the Eisenhower Tunnel. Think that's when my plane crashed.
Your plane? Oh! Bob was looking for a plane, and he found this one. He had a guy, they do like, I don't know, Fox. What do? The cars?
Carfax.
Carfax or whatever. You do it on a plane, he goes, I don't know if you want to get this one.
No, this is the one I had before. The guy, whoever, my plane, when I sold the plane, 20 years ago, I kind of kept track of it because you can keep track of them because
That plane's crashed?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Guy was flying up I assume he was flying up the freeway and thought, oh, I'll just follow the freeway through the mountains. Didn't realize that the freeway went through the mountains, and I think he came around a corner and was like, can't fly the road because the road went in a tunnel, the Eisenhower Tunnel, and I think he just, couldn't out-climb the mountain and couldn't turn around and put it in the side of the mountain.
Dead.
Whole family.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Damn. And that was a good plane, too. Oh, it wasn't for lack of goody.
No, I like that plane. I was almost thinking of buying it back at one time.
Well, that sucks. Well, he had another plane he was trying to buy, and he'd go look at it, and had the wrong tail number, and he goes, I don't know, this thing's been crashed a couple of times.
the tail number, when the guy wrote the report, he goes, literally, the report was like, they found a bolt and decided to replace the plane around the one bolt. The plane was destroyed. And apparently someone did because the guy was like, "Yeah, I don't think you can buy this plane. We're not gonna cover you for that."
So we're doing that. So let's see how much time we got. We are about a minute from the break, and we're just getting everything done. We are kind of warm, man. We got the furnace going and the heater and the generator. We're not plugged in, but I have an autonomous bus.
I heard some rumor of bulletproof, maybe not too far in the future.
Bulletproof for what? Oh!
Coffee.
Okay, well, I forgot.
No, during the break, you explained to me. I'll get it set up.
Donna's up in Maine staying at Derek.
She's giving the radio the one-finger salute. Yeah, Donna. Donna this, Mr. Hancock.
She's like, no, I don't want to go down. I know it's going to turn into a thing, So she was right. It's a thing. There's still a lot of things going on at Derek, constructing, dragging, pulling, stumping, cutting, welding stuff. It's always, I tell you what, it's freaking man camp. Luke may come in. He hadn't come on the show the whole time we've been here. Because he can't get up before noon. He's just he said he might come in. Last night we were yakking. He's going to. But Luke Radowski, We Are Change, is still here. They're working on some solar thing for his rig. But he's got a nice 4x4 2500 Dodge Ram and a fifth wheel. And it's got double pop out. That thing is M. know, so he's about ready to hit the road, too. Or he'll be up here for the winter. I don't think he's going to do that. We'll be right back.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, the future, already been there. Get a levitation kit for my locomotive. You know, I already been there. I don't need no stinking roads. It'd have to be that for this freaking bus, man. It'd be like a locomotive. Crap. It's just one thing after another, man. You know, but it's nice to be back in the bus, though. It has all the goodies and so on. But I gotta get organized, Donna. You know, to help organize everything and stuff. But we got it all loaded up last night. We had some stuff in the other bus there, and storing this and that. So it's all in here, ready to go. And I need to get up to Derek and get some electronic stuff done. But I was hoping to have that all done and heading to Washington State by this weekend, and make it before snow. But it looks like maybe not. So we need some time to do that. So you were saying something about a hub on one of the trail wheels needs tightening or something?
Well, remember that wheel was off the – you got a good audio on me now?
Yeah, go.
Remember that rear right wheel was off the ground a little bit as we got this thing jacked up to work on it, and it got just a little bit of play in the in that trailing wheel. So we'll just take that cover off, and there's a lock nut in there with a lock washer, and we'll tighten it up one click and see how it is. With these bearings, it's better to have it just a little bit loose than a little bit too tight.
It didn't seem like there was a lot of play.
It was probably fine. It's just a little more than I like.
Yep. I'll let Jay do what Jay do. You know, and the pinion gear was just installed a little bit off. It needs more in the something.
Pinion seal nut gear, yeah.
Yeah, it's a thing. But, you know, the way things happen is the way things happen, you know, and you think it's a bad thing. But God just said, you know, I just did you a solid. We had you, you know, you've gotten a certain position to be able to see this, to recognize this, to know this, and learn about the actuating of the airbags. Bob
right.
and I were talking about that. And I'm going, you know, that's something I could probably do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could get the actuator in there and run, I need my seven wires to go through.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so we have, if I can get a leveling thing on this for a couple of days, semi-effort and a few $100s. Are you kidding me? Those things are thousands of dollars to do this. And this thing is already set up to do it if you know what you're doing. I don't want to do a bunch of pneumatic connections and everything. I don't need all that crap.
What we were talking about using some kind of linear actuator or like a, RC plane drone servo,
yeah.
Which would work, which could, the servo itself could be bolted right to the arm of the pneumatic leveler, the air suspension leveler, equalizers, what I believe they call them. And there's at least four of them on this bus. There's four of them because the tag axle runs off of the same air as the drive axle, but there's, you know, essentially one for each corner. And as long as you have air pressure, that linear actuator is the best way to go because we would have to, like, set it up so they all would, like, return to, like, zero, which is driving down the road, but if you had an up and down button somewhere over here for each corner, you could, we're going to a place where it's going to drive over a set of railroad tracks. Let's just lift everything right up. Or, we're not going to quite make it under that bridge, but we don't want to drive 50 miles back down this windy-ass road, so we're going to just let all the air out. I mean, you could go either way with it.
Yeah, no, that's a thing. You know, that would be a big YouTube thing, and it would be a big industry somebody needs to be doing. They probably already are going to pay them things.
So every truck
they already be there.
Every truck driver, every owner operator truck driver, every farmer that's got trucks with air ride, every dump truck guy that's got, every guy running any kind of bus that's air ride. I mean, we could set this thing up like pretty easy, make some detailed videos on it, and those servos are dirt cheap. And I mean, even splurge and buy one that's like all waterproof and stuff.
Yeah, I'm wondering, we'll do that. We'll check on that. That'll be another project because I don't need another project right now. But it definitely, over the next year. See, that's one reason why I wanted to get everything done. I don't want to go the whole year and you know, I only got a month worth of, you know, wow, I wish I did this 11 months ago. I mean, right, you know, that kind of thing. But we're doing all that 11 months ago. And I keep saying we're going to be on the road a year. Well, when does that start? I mean, you know, like, Donna, she's going, no, next May. And I go, I don't know, man. Because the big thing is that we go back to Arizona. I don't know how much I'm wanting to be, you know, working out in the freaking 115 anyway.
Well, you do it. You just go back to Arizona. You do it in February where you're working in the nice 70 degrees and it's sunny and, you know, it's.
Right.
It's,
you know. So, yeah, but we'll get a full year out of this thing. But the it's just, damn. It's just one thing after another. But the bones are good. I
this
mean, you know.
Be set for another 20 years after this year of work you've done to it.
Yeah.
Now, you know.
Well, see, that was the plan. You know, it was, you know, get an older one. I like the classic look, and they're like tanks. You know, that's one of the benefits. But you knew you have to, and you get past all the freaking digital, you know, crap and computer boards and stuff, and it's like relays, and it's a wire. This wire goes here. It's a lot of wires, but it's a wire, you know. And so we knew that we were going to get a better deal on it being old. Well, it was hooked up. It was fixed up by a guy, a retired plumber, did a good job on the inside. It's comfortable and it's made, and he loved him some outlets. So, I mean, you know, it's, and then we added all the other stuff in the studio and everything that we did. So that's fine. You know, the interior, the comfort of it, that's fine. A little bit of infrastructure here, a little leak there, whatever. Yeah, it's fine. Underneath, at what point is it 10 years, 20 years, 40 years that you change all the bushings and bearings and do all that kind of stuff? Well, after 10, 20 years, you got to do it anyway. But it's still expensive. This one being an 80, it was very inexpensive, and everything had to be done anyway. Mm-hmm. So we did, you know. And it, so we probably saved $20,000, you know, on, you know, getting everything done. But we got everything done. It's got new tires. It's got new, you know, the suspension. It's done.
And the steering is tight now.
Yes, it is.
Drives like a modern SUV, right?
It could. It has a little bit of play. Teeny bit, but I know where it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's that little collet that goes over the top, yep, of the, which is something I could, you know,
tinker with later.
Yeah, I can just fix that myself because I could say, I go, there's a little play here, but it's just a connection to the thing. It was just old. That's the way they made them. And I go, well, I can prove this. We need to get those new little squares to just make it tighter or whatever. But no, it's tight. It's much more comfortable to drive now. That was my biggest concern. And to do that, we had to plasma cut the bracket and the old steering box out. We had to take it out, cut the mounting thing out, and then re-weld in a new mounting for the new steering box. That was a daunting task, you know. But Jay had it all clamped up, ready, and got tacked in and said, all right, go to town. So then I welded it all in, whatever, and so on, and it worked. And we got, and I'm like, cool. So I'm in. It's cool. So there's I'm really happy with the steering. That was one of my main concerns. And it looks like we're going to be okay. And we're hitting the road because there's so many people waiting on us for a lot of things. A lot of it we're shipping. You know, we're just doing it, shipping it. And we could have just drove there, but shipping's good. Saves on diesel.
Yep.
Yeah. They go, it cost $100 to send this. It'll take like $1,500 for me to drive there.
Get there.
You know? So we're good. Be right
back. It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Intimate relations on the, with the love bus. Love bus. Give me a love bus. You know, and it's, you know, I'm getting to know it, man. God, man, it's just a thing. But, you know, we'll be good. It does what we need to do. Plus, I've been able to kind of organize it, and we were doing that, and you know, make some more space for more stuff. You know, that we need more signs.
Supposed to declutter your life when you move out of the
Bob's
house.
I know, Bob's like, why do you need this? What's this for? And how come you're taking up space on that? I go, because Donna, creature comforts of, when we park somewhere, it's like, you know, it's home. You know, there's a lot of stuff. But, you know, we got a lot more room up. We've been trying to keep everything below. We got more room up here to put a lot of the stuff. I tell you, one of the big things they have in storage is the Jeep. You know, I go, man, where am I going to buy? I go, crap, I got a Jeep, man. I'm going to put it all in there. You know, like two big canopies or something. I don't need to fill it up in here. I put those back there. Because we need the canopies when we go to different places, especially when you're at a park or something, and making signs. You know, and it's like this, it's rain or, it's, you know, whatever. You know, you just pop up these two canopies, boom.
Yeah, you know? That's where all your sign-making stuff, that should be. The Jeep is the sign-making storage area. So you just boom, bang, boom, it's right there.
And that's what's happened, Mr. Anderson. So, you know, get off my ass. So we're putting it all in. You know, one of the things that I did, I wanted to do three techniques. One is the laser stencil, you know, which is awesome. You know, you get some detail. We're going to have some fun with that one. You do the laser stencil. Then the other thing is making stencils on that waterproof wallboard stuff with a digital projector on a wall.
Right.
You know, so that you could do anything. We showed the guys in Michigan how to do that. Hell, man, they're going to town.
Well, you can cut that vinyl with the laser, too, can't you?
Probably.
I bet you could throw a sheet of that on there and have at it. I bet you'd cut just fine.
Maybe. I'm not.
Might be a little stinkier because you're burning vinyl, but I mean.
Well, it has an exhaust fan, but, you know, that might be something the K40 could do.
Yeah, I could probably do stencils about yay big on the K40. I haven't even fired that up. It's just been sitting same place we put it down when you're like.
I got
a life.
So just for
I'm
the people
retired
who,
and on vacation.
Who aren't watching a live stream, when Bob did yay big, he gestured. It was basically like the top of a shoebox.
Yeah.
I know. I was sitting there going, yeah, they saw that one, Bob. K40, it's a 40-watt laser that is, you know, it's a hobby kind of $500 you make coasters out of. You can do a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah.
We did.
Oh, yeah.
But Derek wanted to go, laser, you know. So he got a 100-watt big freaking pan. That thing just whizzes through him. So we have this thin plywood. It is, what do you call that stuff?
Door skin or, you know.
Is that the MDF something?
Yeah, something like that. It's a quality, you know, but it's used for shipping of parts. Anyway, he had a friend that got a bunch of it in his warehouse, so they just kept giving it to him. And we've been whipping through that stuff. But it's 4x4 sheets, and we cut it down into 18x25 or 24, I think, yard sign size. So you can make anything. Friday, Rick Kerp from Michigan goes, yep, we won. You know, the Supreme Court has 7-0 that the governor violated the emergency, whatever the hell power she had. 4-3, they said the law was unconstitutional, the Michigan State Constitution, and the law is struck down. You know, so, of course, I only lost, you know, 4-3. No, you lost 7-0 and the law that the horse you rode in on.
You're still a loser.
Loser.
So who's staying after school for detention?
Nobody. She keeps doing it anyway. And he said, and Rick goes, I got a, you know, a letter from the county. We're still to keep you safe and, you know, under control. Because if you're not in control, you're out of control.
Well, it gets into that, like, well, you have your ruling. Now enforce it. You know, I
mean, the attorney general in Michigan said, I'm not enforcing it. Well, now they go down to the county. I mean, these guys aren't going to stop.
No.
So what we did is I go, you know, I bet you we could make a sign. So there's a thing you put up photo to stencil. And several different sites came up. And of the three that I was playing with, one of them I think worked better. I can't remember which one it was. Donna put it in the archive for Friday. But they had pictures of her. And some of them were their, you know, different expressions that you want. I go, yeah, that one. So we put Derek and I, you know.
Pictures of Donna?
No, of the governor.
Oh, her. Okay,
Whitmer,
okay.
So we take and go, yeah, that one. So we take pictures and we put the stencil. It makes a stencil. You know, of her face, because you wanted to see her. Well, we did the Joker, you know, why so serious with green hair and red lips and all that. But it's her, why so serious? And the slogan was, you know, it said that, and then it said, shut up and believe! Who says that all the time?
I don't know.
That was Keith McAnarchist.
Oh, yeah.
He's always go, shut up and believe. I got to use that. So that's the sign that we did. Well, we did it, you know, and we made the stencils, and we shipped them. They're probably getting them today. I mean, Friday to stencil another state, boom, done. And the kid that was helping, it was in helping the friend move to Colorado or something. He's in Fort Worth now, and he's coming up, be up there, probably there now. And him and Rick are going to start mass producing them again. Well, then Derek had an idea. He goes, you know what you could do? You could just do it on that plastic, you know, that sheet, you know, those thin film, whatever the hell it is. And he goes, let's do that. So we did Why So Serious with her picture, and you do it on like a 2 foot wide, but, you know, like 18 inches high. And you take a staple gun and it wraps around telephone poles.
I saw that picture of that.
You
that
put that,
awesome.
Put it out, you go thunk, 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 done.
Right,
and if you
awesome.
Get up on a bucket or a stepladder, ain't nobody going to be able to reach it or get it unless they make an effort. And Karen ain't going to do that. Unless,
no.
You know. So it's there's so many creative things that's coming. Because of that, we came up with ideas. Yeah, we still got to do Ireland and Australia because we got guys in Ireland and Australia that are going to be putting these up. So I'm thinking of doing the stencil thing with their leader or the queen or prime minister of or something. Why so serious?
I do a leprechaun.
Shut up and believe.
Do a leprechaun with a mask on.
Shut up and believe.
Something. We'll come up with a kid.
Well, see, I don't know. That's why you need their help with the cultural thing. Would that be piss them off, not piss them off? That, you know, I don't know. You know, but it is, it's their creativeness flows, man. We get in front of that, you know, screen. Crap just happens. We get all the other stuff out of the way, and we just sit there and just start playing. You know? It's like here in New Hampshire, are they still draconian?
I mean, actually, I got kicked out of a gas station the other day.
Best thing ever happened to you.
15 miles from here.
I went to 5 gas stations before they kicked me out of one.
Second time I've been asked to leave a place. The first time was a diner that's in the Tilton Diner in Tilton, New Hampshire. It's owned by this corporation that called the Common Man Restaurants. They bought up all the diners around here, and they're basically an anti-gun, really pro-left, you know, owners. So people should boycott the Common Man chains here in New Hampshire, which is most of the diners that look mom and poppy aren't. They're owned by some corporation. And then we have Red Arrow Diner, which there's like 4 of those in New Hampshire. They're cool. One of them's got a Bitcoin vending machine in Nashua, and they're not enforcing any mask stuff. But I go up to the gas station. I walk around in the gas station. I go use the bathroom. I grab a coffee, take a couple sips out of it, grab a slice of pizza out of the thing, put it in a box, and just walk over. And the guy's like, well, you need to have a mask. I'm like, well, I have one. It's on my face. You can't see it? He's like, you don't have a mask on, sir. I go, well, I have a nose. That's my mask. And he's like, I can't And I stood there for about maybe a minute and a half and just gave him a bunch of shit and then finally left. But I said, you know, you're taking medical advice from pedophiles and war criminals.
I kept trying to remember what it was. He always says this, war criminals. I go, I know it's pedophile. I don't take medical advice from pedophiles and something. I can't remember what it was Jay says, war criminal.
Okay. War criminals, yeah. You know, Bill Gates is a war criminal. His vaccine is inflammation in Africa. It's essentially war on the African people. It has damaged and killed.
They think so. All right, they can't hear you over the break. All right, we'll be back in just a little bit more, getting caught up on every little old thing. Getting new to Bob, and we'll get all, then we got to get to work. You know, it's kind of, it's cold, man. It's cold. Then we're going to get to work.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. To break free from your lies.
I'm covering the secrets and exposing the lie. And the lie is that we have coffee. We need to get a coffee going. Donna, where's my book? We're over there. We got it. A work, and she had me, you know, put everything up. I got the coffee maker going, but we had the hot water heater on, and that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
It flips. You're not supposed to do that. Can't, you know, on the circuit, we had the air conditioner, the hot water heater, and the coffee maker, and you can't have two of any of those things that are on the same circuit. So I need to change a circuit on one of these things so I don't have to, you know, wait, we got to turn off the air conditioner. We're making coffee. Well, I want the air conditioner, you know, or the
right.
So it's, you know.
Camper, RV life.
But I can fix it.
Yeah.
I just move some stuff around on the panel, and I ain't got to worry about that anymore. I ain't got a camper life. I want freaking first world to kiss my ass. That's what, you know. I want to be able to do whatever I want to do.
And as soon as you get some time.
That light right above your head there, push the button on that thing.
This thing here?
Yeah, you'll see a button. There you go. See, now we got some light here. You can dial it up, too, if you want. Yeah, just turn the dials. That was one thing, Luke, man, he's all up on this light thing. He's got a lot. I still have him in the box. That's what that big box over there is for, you know, stuff. So we're just, it's just never a freaking waking moment that I have to do any of the little finishy blue green screen, whatever crap. We got everything. It's just we're working on it all the time. But it keeps getting better and better and better, so that's good. I'm worried about, you know, being able to be consistent on the road and safe. You know, I get out, you know, away from you guys. You know, I got Bob in Arizona. I got, you know, Derek in Maine and Jay in New Hampshire, but
who's in the middle?
Exactly. I'm like, you know, well, there's probably some guys in Missouri and Oklahoma. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, there's always going to be somebody to help and everything,
yep.
But I know where the tools. I got a lot of tools. I know Bob's like, you know.
Yes. You do.
I go, yes, I do. I will not be without a tool. I tell you one thing, what really did it.
Well, you just need to not have to unpack the whole bus to get to a 7/16-inch wrench.
Know,
that's what you got to work on.
I know. No, it was, Jay goes, I need an inch and a quarter.
Inch and 7/8 socket.
Yeah, inch and 7/8 socket. You know, and I just had put all the stuff back. And that is, when the hell am I going to use that again, right? And it was in the back. I'm like, screw you. I am not getting that. We got to find something. So anyway, we found another one. But I was like, right when I got done, and Bob knew it too. He's going,
Ernie knows right where that is. He just organized all his
tools. I'm under the bus, and I'm like, hey, I need an inch and 7/8 socket. And Bob's like, yeah, Ernie just had one in his hand. He's like, I put it away. It's buried.
No, it's
take
buried.
Me 2 days
that's
to get to it.
Yeah, how often do I need that? I've been using that. That was months ago before I need that again. But the, it was $3,000 just to tool this thing up.
Oh,
with,
yeah.
With tools that I already had, but they were 9/16, not 2 inches of 9/16. I mean, you know, that kind of crap. You know, so it's just everything. So anyway, but that's one thing about these buses. They, you know, another 1,000 pounds here and there, it doesn't really notice, does it?
No, not really. I mean, this is a real. These things are just so overbuilt, and they're so rugged. I mean, what else from 1980 holds up like this?
Right.
You know, you got to figure where they normally would built them for being able to put, like, you know, 60, 70 people and all their luggage on them and then cross country. So, I mean, they can handle some stuff.
Yeah, you know, you always go, oh, look at all this stuff. I go, well, there's no people in here. There's none of their luggage. You know, you got, you know, 200-pound meat bags times 100 or whatever. I mean, you know, there's a lot of weight that goes in these things.
And you got most of your heavyweight is down bottom, down low. So the center of gravity is way lower than if this thing was loaded with a bunch of 200-pound people.
Yeah. So I'm not worried about, like, they're saying, oh, you're going to tow a car? It doesn't even know it's there.
No, yeah.
You know, but the braking thing. So we did the brakes, you know. Did we ever check the front brakes?
We, yes, they looked pretty good. They had plenty of meat on them, and I don't know if we ever adjusted the front brakes. We'll go through a brake adjustment again just to make sure. That's not hard to do, and that's good practice to do that.
Yeah, we've done it a couple of times, but we changed the brakes, you know, or the clean up all the oil and did all the, you know, whatever, the brake stuff. And so we're good. I was concerned about brakes, and it seems to be, you know, a lot better. And then, but the steering. And then the suspension. I'm really looking forward to getting this thing on the road because it's way better than it was when we first got it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not even the same bus. So I'm just really looking forward to it. Plus, it has everything. When we took it to the shop and we used Taryn's RV when we went to Michigan, it was nice. It's a nice rig. It's a 550, you know, 5,500 big diesel.
Yeah, 550. Ford F-550 with a 6-liter diesel.
Yeah, and that thing kicked ass, but and it was smaller and you get around, but we just didn't have near enough of our stuff. Even towed the Jeep, but it was, yeah, it was not. We needed the bus. So I'm really, this is, it's amazing what you get used to. Now we're in a basement, the nice bedroom, you know, suite bathroom thing that Derek has in his home. So that's been nice, but then you got, like, you know, Ernie and Donna living in your house. But the, in the basement, and that's nice, but.
Having Ernie and Donna live in your house or in your yard is an add. It's a plus. You guys
you
are like.
Get shitload stuff done, I can tell you that.
You guys are really, like, great to have around. So, you know, it's fun to have you around. You know, you know, Cypress loves you guys. We love you guys. You're, you know, you're good people. You're kind of people
thank
you want to have
you,
around.
Thank you. Well, we like to be productive so that we are welcome, you know. It's like, I know Bob's like, I need some Ernie and Donna. I need some Ernie and Donna on that storage container there. I need some Ernie and Donna on that,
yeah.
You know, that over there.
Well, and to being productive, you know, is you guys are from a mindset because, you know, your dad put you to work. This is why I'm, like, I strap my daughter on me almost every day. Go feed pigs. We drive the backhoe around. We, you know, do stuff. You know, and the thing is these kids that are my age now, I'm 40, that, you know, they went to a daycare or to, you know, put Barney on the television and give them, you know, Prozac or whatever, or Ritalin. You know, these are the ones now that are screaming, I want my stimulus check, and, you know, Bernie Sanders, and, you know, we love Hillary Clinton. You know, they're, you know, or Kamala Harris or Biden or whoever. I can't tell the difference between any of them, but
they are in for such a rude awakening.
But the, going back to you being productive, I mean, that's just like, you know, you don't like sitting around doing nothing.
Yeah, no, I have to. If I'm not doing something for me, I'm doing it for you. And a lot of times, you know, it's the same. You know, and I appreciate it when people do it for me. But it's, you know, Bob, Jay, Derek, when I show up, you know, what's on your list? Let's get it done. Let's do that. Okay, and that. Now, a lot of it's just inertia, or you need two guys, or it'll sit there forever until you got somebody standing there with a screwdriver to.
He's a basement cleaning SOB, I'll tell you that.
I get it done. Oh, yeah, that's right. We came up with Bob's, you know, about a year ago. He had his place, and he's got, oh, I got this house, got the baby. I go, I'm looking at it, and I'm going, 3.2 hours, add another hour. I have this done before lunch, you know. Boom, done. Of course, you know, everybody wants to do it their way, and I did it wrong. But, you know, I do it. You know, that's one thing about Jay, Derek, and Bob, too. They just like, nah, I ain't worried about it. Except Derek yelled at me.
For?
He goes like this. He goes, I feel like I've taken a stupid pill.
Oh.
Because I put new drainage, collapsible drainage stuff to extend, you know, on one of his, just drain of the, rainwater on the house and everything he had out in the field and everything. So I took the time, dug it out, installed it, put it in, you know, backfilled it over, and I was driving over it while I was doing some other. He goes, you drove that excavator over that? You crushed it. It's flat now. It's not going to work. It's got
track dead. Machine really shouldn't do that unless it's very shallow.
It was, you know, less than 2 feet, but,
yeah,
you know, but it.
A wheel machine, yes.
Yeah, but definitely, well, no, it was track. And that's why I thought, what do I know? I'm from Arizona.
Right.
We use harder PVC. It's out in the desert at Bob's.
Yeah, you just put the dirt back in, it turns to rock.
Yeah, so I'm not used to this soft crap like this. So, sure enough, it was squished. I'm going,
music.
Sorry. I feel like I took a stupid pill. Yes, you did. But, you know, that's the only time. I mean, that's about bad to get some of you guys. But we'll be back next hour. We'll go over some news. Now we got to do the news. Maybe. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, We must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
But man, relatively concerned. You look at all the stuff that's going on. We're going to do a ink blot test of headlines here with Jay and Bob because damn. All right, here's one of the top ones. Nursing home residents protest lockdown. Rather die from COVID than loneliness.
Absolutely.
Yeah. My mother is in a home in Mesa, Arizona. Nice place. She likes it there and so on. She's got her, well, her roommate got tested positive for COVID, so they pulled them both out of the room, put them both in their solitary confinement, 21 days. I go, Mom, what do we need to do? What do you got to have? I said, all I want for Christmas is my grandma, my mom, my great-grandmother. We're going to protest out in front. I think that would be a nationwide thing.
Oh, yeah.
All I want for Christmas is, they go, fine, you'd rather die from COVID? We'd rather you die from COVID, too. No problem. We'll hook you up.
Yeah. No, it's I can't believe all the, there has been more brought up about what the governors did with
they want them to die.
They wanted them to. That was genocide. It was elder genocide.
You want to die? You'd rather die from COVID? Not a problem. No, got you covered.
They did it on purpose to empty out their
tax
burden.
Yeah, we did the math on it. It was like so much a day times 365 times 30,000 times they saved a bunch of money.
Bunches of money, and they did it on purpose. He was on these news conferences almost every day talking about, if it gets into an old folks' home, it runs like wildfire. And he's basically lighting matches and throwing them into these old folks' homes.
This is Governor Cuomo you're talking about.
Yeah, Cuomo. Whitmer did it, the governor in PA, the governor in New Jersey.
So it's all these governors that are taking medical advice from pedophiles and war criminals is what it comes down to.
They are pedophiles and war criminals.
Absolutely.
I know anywhere Jay goes, anybody say, I don't take advice from pedophiles and war criminals.
Yeah, no.
I don't take advice from pedophiles and war criminals.
They get really pissed, especially the people that, just love Bill Gates, got a little Biden tattoo, thing on the back of their neck or whatever.
Nobody's calling it. It was genocide. I mean, if they had done that to, a certain religious organization. they did that on purpose. They killed these old people.
Well, wonder how 30s Germany happened, and you're sitting here watching it. This is how the people immersed it. The fish don't know they're in water.
That's what I said to the kid at the gas station. I looked at him and I said, so, you're the guy that would tell the SS where Anne Frank is, right? And he's like, I don't even know who Anne Frank is. I'm like, she was a Jew that was murdered because it was illegal to be Jewish because somebody said, I'm following the law and reporting you to the SS. And he's like, you need to leave the store. I'm calling the police.
How old was he?
Kyle.
Maybe old enough to buy a beer. Young, brainwashed, skillless, whatever.
Okay, AAP, let's find out who that is, wants children enrolled in COVID-19 vaccine clinical trials. Yeah. American Academy of Pediatrics. Are you freaking kidding me?
The credibility has just been lost by me with all those guys. And any of these guys are coming out of any academic institutions, they're all just corrupt.
Okay, listen to this. This is, Sarah Goza, MD, president of AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics. This is your pediatrician group. Wrote a letter addressed to U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar and Food and Drug Administration Commissioner Stephen Hahn, saying children must be included in vaccine trials to to best understand any potential unique immune responses and or unique safety concerns.
So we need to kill
a few kids, find out what's up.
Hurt children first.
Wow. Wow. Okay. That's the world we're living in. I wonder how much it's going to change in a month, you know, after the election stuff. You know, this is, and Biden did this, Democrats do that, don't care.
Hey, Trump kissed a boy and he liked it.
Is that what he says?
No, that was the headline we were looking at earlier that he was at that.
Well,
now that
tell the people what that was about.
Well, it's off of, you know, InfoWars, so you got to take it with whatever grain of salt you get out of Alex, right? But it was
way more trustworthy than CNN or Fox.
Oh, I know. I mean, he may embellish it a little bit.
Absolutely. Well,
it's always based on something.
It says right here, watch, Trump dances to gay anthem and expresses desire to kiss men now that he's immune. Now, he was at some big rally with a bunch of, you know, friggin' people that were the gay persuasion, and he's not worried about it, and he's very libertarian in his viewpoint of that, and he was like, you know, I'm immune, come into the audience, and, you know, I'll kiss all you guys, and I don't have
to worry
about it.
Give me some COVID with open arms like Ernie does?
Give me some COVID. So Trump actually said that, I'll come out there and kiss
you all? Well, I have to watch it a little bit more of it, because I'll see what Alex had to say about it, because, like I say, he does embellish a little bit, but, you know, That whole thing when he did, he got off, went up there on the balcony and whipped his mask off and all that stuff. He came back, was more or less, you know, 3 days I crushed it, you know, and everybody was totally nutted up about the fact that he was, you know, he didn't die. Damn it.
Well, they know he didn't. They go, you didn't really have it. It's all fake and we know it. You're playing us, you know, that kind of crap. It's just a cold, you liar. Dr. Fauci says Trump campaign harassing me. They're harassing me by using clips and ads without my consent. You know, Dr. Fauci has long prided himself on being apolitical. Right. He also told CNN that Trump's decision to hold nearly daily campaign rallies until November 3rd was like asking for trouble. You know, who cares what you think? You know,
how come Fauci hasn't been fired? How come he hasn't been hung for treason? I mean, Fauci is a horrible, evil swamp monster. He is the example.
I've been waiting for. There's some shoes drop. Well, what they did, Trump declassified all of the Hillary email thing. But who's going to report it?
Has anyone done any report on this?
No.
Declassification? Has
no,
VR Change
be,
done
no.
it? Has InfoWars
yeah,
done
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You'll have, the alternative whatever, and there'll be somebody who'll dive deep, and then it'll get spread amongst and whatever, but you're not the lamestream media, not the media so last century.
We need some declassification, you know, outing signs.
Everything. Yeah. Everything. Let's see. Yeah, we got.
It's like that whole Durham report. Nothing's ever going to come of that.
How we institutionalize incompetence, blah, blah, blah. Dissenting scientists issue COVID-19 herd immunity declaration. Freddie Sayers talks to eminent epidemiologist Dr. Sunitra Gupta, Dr. J. Basa, what you call it, and Dr. Martin something, who met in Massachusetts to sign a declaration calling for a different global response to the pandemic, which is let it go. You're not going to stop it anyway. Just, you know, have a freaking apple or something.
Oh, Dr. Shiva's been all about this right from the beginning, just saying basically the same stuff Dr. Judy's been saying about. And he's been testifying like crazy in Massachusetts. He's running the Senate campaign. He's running for Senate in Massachusetts. They're taking down his signs everywhere. They're, you know, just he's and like a lot of my friends that I've been in the Liberty Movement with forever from Massachusetts, they all love Shiva. He's not a perfect libertarian, but, man, he's really right on what he's doing right now.
You know, I've talked to him quite a few times and his last campaign and this, and he called the spring yelling at me because I had some response to him yelling at RFK on the site I should take it down by the road.
Oh, really?
You know, I go, no, anything. You can say whatever you want, but I ain't taking anything down. You know, it's new, you know?
Yep.
So, I guess I'm not letting you anymore. But we'll go ahead and go through more news. There's some cool stuff up here. We get back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
And Jay Noon and Robert Anderson. Mr. Anderson. Okay, here's one of the stories. They give you a little bit of, you know, kind of cryptic information here for the crypto cruise ship Satoshi to make Panama Bay home. All right. Well, I'm not sure I want it to be. Isn't that point is not being a home? You know, and you're quarantined, and you're on the in the bay or something, whatever. The crypto cruise ship called Satoshi is gearing up to set sail from the Mediterranean to Panama, where it will drop anchor and call the bay its home. The ship has 777 cabins that will be auctioned off as condos. Bitcoin would be accepted for all. Okay. So it's going to be, I don't know if I want it just parked anywhere. Panama went stupid on this COVID thing. They were, like, patrolling beaches and stuff. You're not allowed. They're arresting people. So I don't know.
That's another beautiful thing as we get to see who the extra authoritarian places are. It seems like everywhere where you can't have a gun or it's very heavily restricted, like Australia,
yeah.
New Zealand,
right.
Port, you know, California, New York, it's pretty bad.
They have a headline here. Stephen Lindman's headline is, "Disruption Planned If Trump Defeats Biden." And Donna put the graphic up. Nicolas Cage is like, "No, really? I mean, you know, well, duh." So I'm not sure. This is, I'm feeling a last gasp of the globalist agenda of we going to rule, got to take
Well, I don't know
America.
If it's the last gasp, but yeah.
For America, this is it.
I'll predict it right now. The Republicans lose the election, there won't be a Republican Party in 10 years. It will be a one-party state.
It already is. What's the difference between Republicans and Democrats right now?
Well, I mean, at least you have the vehicle for someone like not that I think, you know, the Donald's all that in a bag of chips, but, you know, compared to like going down this socialist avenue where the Democrats going to take us.
He's just.
It is.
I understand your point and the sentiment, and it shows that the American people aren't ready to just start goose-stepping into socialism. But, I mean, when you print $6 trillion and you got the Federal Reserve doing whatever.
Yeah,
it's
basic stuff. Like, you know, the fact that he's such a, you know, advocate, or at least he says he is advocate of the Second Amendment. Not that I'm a big gun guy. You know, we're in Arizona and we have guns and I shoot, but I mean, I'm not one of these, you know, I'm not a super gunny guy, but it's a bellwether. And the thing is, you sit there, you look at Australia. When was Christ?
You didn't think you're a gun guy until the German when television crews came in and you emptied out your gun safe.
I mean,
I guess I'm a gun guy.
But you sit there and you go, when you look, when was the Christchurch shooting? 2 years ago?
Yeah.
I mean,
New Zealand.
I mean, from 2 years to how long ago did they take the guns away from Australia? Wasn't that about 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
No, Australia was like
a decade.
A decade ago?
Yeah.
So in less than a decade, look what. You can't publish something on the internet that's critical of the government. They go into your apartment, drag you out, and arrest you. In 10 years, they went from being a free people to not so much.
Well, they've tested it here. And they had, combat vets coming back, and they'd say something. They go, you know, commit them. They give them a 24-plus, you know, hour. That's where John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute was doing, protecting these guys. You have veterans coming back. They say something online. They go, you know, commit into a mental institution or something.
Red flag law.
You know, this is,
The thing is when the food can't get to the inner cities. So one conversation that we probably have here at this place almost daily, especially with somebody like that just shows up that isn't really in the know, you know, some muggle shows up, they get an edumacation about food. So I got people coming and buying, you know, I sold a couple $100 worth of meat last week. You know, almost every weekend I've been selling a couple $100 worth of meat. And people are like, don't really have their head wrapped around this concept that the whole food supply system has been so propped up and so government subsidized. This is why, you know, my country style ribs, which is one of the best pork cuts I think there is on a pig, country style ribs, is, you know, I sell for $9 a pound. In a frozen package. And in the store, I took a picture. It said Southern style ribs. Didn't even look anything like country style ribs, but they're basically the same thing. I think Southern means government subsidized, but $1.99 a pound. And this was, I don't know, a week ago. But what people don't understand is that these massive farm subsidies are going to these major operations that are, you know, literally buying corn cheaper then the farmer can grow it, because the corn farmer, the soybean farmer, the canola farmer, all these like grains that are genetically modified, sprayed with all kinds of Roundup, they're subsidized, and the way you get the subsidy is through a crop insurance, and the crop insurance, the only way you get that is if you use Monsanto growing practices, and of course are in bed with, you know, the globalist, you know, government, Monsanto, blah, 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 whatever. And what happens is, as soon as hyperinflation catches up, there's an article, actually, I think, believe it's on your thing, I saw about Venezuela was the organic prepper. And she was talking about how Venezuela is just, you know, we're seeing what Venezuela started seeing right before their food shortages, their food crisis. And if we look at all the money that Venezuela just, like, you know, they couldn't print it because they didn't have a printing press. They got to buy it from some other company to print it. But they basically just started, you know, moving a decimal point, essentially, on the money.
Yeah, it was costing them more to print it than the money was worth.
Right. And but with what... The difference between the United States and Arizona is this is a great experiment we're going to see. So you're going to have places where the people are not in control because they can't defend themselves. There's places they can't even go hunting or fishing. How many kids that are 15 years old right now in America know how to, you know, tie a fishing hook and set a bobber and bait a fishing hook and cast it versus when you guys were 15 years old, how many kids knew how to had this fishing skill?
Opie Taylor knew how to do it.
Yeah, no, it's
and just the same thing was like, you know, most of your average, you know, 15, 20-year-olds, you know, today, especially the ones that are living in urban America or, you know, are planning on going to college and been playing sports ball and all that stuff, you know, this sports ball thing has been a major distraction for young America because these kids are just all playing sports ball. They're not learning any real-life skills at all. They're not learning how to do anything.
Yeah, just field dressing an animal. They did that up at Jackalope. Yeah.
We did that here this past weekend. People butchered their own chicken. They caught their own chicken. They butchered their chicken. You were here a little bit for it.
Yeah. And we did the turkeys at Ernest, and we did the pig up there at Jackalope just to show people, hey, this is how you got to, you know, you kill an animal, you got to know how to at least, you know, turn it into food.
I was probably 13, 14, and I out at my uncle's and I shot a pigeon, and or a dove or something. And he goes, "Well, now you got to skin it.
I got to eat it."
You know, I'm like, "Damn it!" You know. So I go, "Yeah, you're right." You know, that was kind of, you know, because I hit it and I didn't really think I, you know, it was a piece of crap BB gun. But so I go, "All right." So he just laid it on its back and just ripped the skin between the legs and just de-skinned it,
yep.
Feathers and everything. Just boom, and then his thumbs just popped out the breast, and I go, wow, that was fast.
Food.
You know, I'm going, okay, you know, there's that. Then you take all the organs out and you can stew it or, you know, whatever. So I never forgot that. And I always thought that was very good information to know. How to skin, how to dress a fish. We had to do the kids up at Jackalope, mm-hmm. caught that fish. So Anthony came over, a young man that does know this kind of stuff. You know, he's in his 20s and he was one of the guys, Renee's son. So he showed him how to dress a fish. Where do you get that? YouTube, or Bandcamp? Bandcamp, the new YouTube channel. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
And
Bob Anderson.
And
Jay Noon.
You know, what we're going to do is we started going down this road. You know, it man camp. We're talking about, you know, a lot of the guys here doing some stuff, and you have trained some people to be useful on a farm and everything that they're, you know, probably not worth, you know, yourself. You can't clone yourself yet, you know, or get a, you know, what about that, Jay? What if there was a J-certified android robot knows how to kind of go and get done thing? You're like, good, finally. You know, do that. Or
go turn that bolt for me.
Right.
Go feed the pigs.
I mean, you know, I mean, how far are you willing to go? You know, is it, or you got to go to man camp? See, what Jay did, it was years ago, he came and we were talking about it. He goes, man, I just need man camp. I got to show these people how to man the freak up. I mean, you got to, you know, do a little welding, a little forging, a little man camp. And we'll take it up to Porcupine Freedom Festival, and, you know, people will come. people were bringing their teenagers. Mm-hmm. You know, husbands and wives said, here's my kid, man him up, you know, and she's a 12-year-old girl. So, you know, it's just, you know, get him. So what Jay did is he brought it, his forge and some different things up to Derek's. So he had, you know, his kids there. They were interested. They were, mm-hmm. you know, getting into it. But I'm like, screw them, man. Move over. I want to learn how to do this stuff. So, you know, Bob and I have always been talking about, you know, building forges and doing different yeah. stuff and everything. And, but it's just, you know, we've all had the experiences of how do you, you know, even put a hook on a line? You know, how do you get the fish off the hook without dying? You know, how do you, you know, dress the fish? What about the poultry? What about? I remember in the 90s, a friend of mine, he got divorced, and he goes, American women just are not, I can't deal with, you know, this programming and everything. So he went to the Philippines to get married, Greg and Doreen. You know, mm-hmm. he went, you know, he did pen pal back before the internet and all this stuff. This is early 90s, I guess. And he went to the Philippines, he pen paled, and, you know, I'm, you know, a white man with job looking for, you know, a wife that's, you know, got her head on straight, and they go, oh, we got this one right here. Line them up. You're not leaving. We got this one right here, you know. And so he wound up marrying her. They got two kids, been together for 20-something years.
Yeah, she's a nice girl.
Yeah, it worked out great. So we're good friends. And but it was an attitude that he was trying to get away from. It was this entitlement of, you know, something, you know, no work ethic. You know, I need a man, like, do everything for me kind of deal.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a, you know, a partnership. You pull in the wagon together, not somebody riding in the wagon while somebody's pulling right. it.
You know, and on the flip side of this is, you know, I've been noticing now for years, and this was before I had a daughter, the women, like, the girls are way tougher than the boys. A lot of the women in their 20s and 30s are, first off, way more responsible. They're way more likely to fight for freedom, especially the ones that have kids, you know, the red pill moms. As the term I came up with, RPMs, there's a Facebook chat thing my wife is on with a bunch of these local RPMs, she calls it, red pill moms. But, you know, the women are badass. And just like at a Pork Fest a couple years ago, and I had the forge all set up there, I mean, it was a 14-year-old girl. I don't even know how old James Dorothy Babs is.
She's probably 18 now.
Well, it was a couple years 18, ago, 19. And so it was her. She was a little older. There was another girl, and there was another girl that was pretty young, maybe not 10. But, like, the handful of girls, like, just totally pretty much blew away what the boys are doing. There was one boy who was pretty good, actually. He could hang with the girls. His name was Colby. And but, you know, Colby's dad was, like, you know, one of these guys who's, like, influences, like, doing stuff with your hands and not, like, hanging out in front of a project, you know, a monitor or something or a device. But growing up, I have even noticed in the horse business, my dad had a horse farm, so a bunch of girls just, like, started showing up when they were, like, 8-10 years old, and their parents would leave them there because it was kind of like daycare, and they would put them to work, cleaning stalls, stacking hay. You need to drive that tractor. This is how you use the clutch, you know. You know, half these
I'm
kids.
Trying to get Donna to go on the excavator, and we'll do it before she leaves. She's going to run some of the equipment just to say she did. And James Babb was up there this weekend, and he went on a family vacation, his $2 and his wife, and it was like thousands of dollars. It wasn't free. It was an all-day thing that you went out on construction equipment.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You had a bulldozer and a backhoe and a blade, you know, whatever, and you got to try each one, and you got to work on this. This is the kind of stuff that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
This that is, too. You know, and all of this stuff used to be, when I was a kid, you went, what was it, Cub Scout, Weeblo, Boy Scout, and you got your badges, and you didn't, and it was like a regimented American men going to learn stuff, and then you had Girl Scouts, and then they had to screw it up. So now it's...
Of course they had to screw it up.
Exactly. They had... Because I remember in the movie Red Dawn, you know, when they invaded America, you have been a graduate of the paramilitary, you know, training camp of the, what? He goes, what? Boy Scouts. Oh, but that's civilian. That's not military. Well, it's cultural. You know, it's a culture thing. And how do you determine what the merit badges are. Well, you get, you know, the community of they, them, those get on the board of, we need a merit badge for, you know, basket weaving or something.
Sober Dave made up merit badges for the people who did the chicken, the stage three or level three process survival camp.
Yeah.
Survival training where they camped out overnight. They built their own shelters. They went to the creek. They got the water. They built the fires. They got their water hot so they could, you know, wash their chickens. They caught and butchered their chickens. And they all got a knife and a badge.
Nice.
What kind of badge? Where do you get?
You know what? I haven't seen the badge. You just told me about it.
Awesome.
Badges? Yeah. You don't need no stinking badges.
Yeah, you like wearing it. They had, you know, now Luke Radowski and Silver Dave, you know, working together on that. And they add to each other, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Luke
yep.
knows how to market and doing kind of trade out and sponsorship, that kind of stuff. And Dave is just, you know, special forces guy, knows how to do it. And he just, damn it.
You know what's most impressive?
I need Luke.
You know what's most impressive about Luke? I've noticed is Luke will, like, something he knows nothing about, never done before, he will just dive into the research and then will, like working on his truck or working on his camper. He gets into the research and, you know, and he just understands and can really wrap his head around something that he hasn't experienced.
Well, I tell you, the motivation he has is doing YouTube.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yep.
He wants to videotape it, man. He's got the – in fact, to make it easy, he has this Osmo DJI, you know, camera thing. Yeah. And it made it really easy. I go, I want that. And it's sitting right over there in that
yep.
packet. I haven't turned it on once. I think you've used it more than I have.
Well, you know? I tried to link it to my phone, but I couldn't get it, and my phone wasn't the right sort of phone.
Yeah, whatever. Yep. So I got a new phone to be able to do it. Oh, I got finally got my goggles for my drone, and they go, oh, it's not for that model. You got to buy the other model. And nice. I go, you sons of okay. But anyway, because – Derek wants that one because he built drone back in the day. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, nobody had drones because the accelerometers and the gyros and the this and the that and the company, you know, everything to get it to even
the technology
hold,
just
to hold stable. And now evolved. It's like he's just like boop 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 boop. It's like a video game. I'm going, yeah, pretty nice. He goes, yeah, I definitely want that. You know,
yeah.
So I may trade out with him, and I brought it with me because we need to get some fall, you know, some color changes and different footage. But that's the thing I really need to spend time on is all the footage and stuff that I've been doing, all this stuff and pictures. I need to make videos, but I don't have time. I got to freaking get on it, and if I can do it while Donna's driving, but she ain't driving with the steering the way it was, so we got that done. Donna, you can drive it now.
We'll see how that works out.
Well, I don't think I can edit because, you know, while you're moving around, it's hard to do the mouse, you know, and editing, you know, it's just, so it will get to it. It'll be a thing, but it's just, you know, fortunately, we've been busy getting really good guests, you know, attracting good activists, applying them with stuff, making sure that they're, you know, effective, and it's adding to the, every. So we're not sitting on our hands. I mean, you know, we're getting stuff done, plus helping you guys and stuff. So the man camp thing, they did, I want to talk more about that. Because this is a cultural thing. They did. They had, like Bob said, they had to get rid of the Boy Scout thing. They had to. That was, man, this Boy Scout thing is a little too much self-sufficiency. Yeah, a little bit too much confidence. A little too much wealth.
Confidence is really important. It's number one, I think, with this.
Yeah, that's why, you know, women with confidence, and they've been trying to build them up to have confidence, they're Wonder Women.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Don't need no stinking roads. You need to know how to build one, though. Yeah. I've been building. You know, that's another thing. You know, that's. I look at all the roads up here, and it's always, you know, they got frost heaving, and the roads go bad, and then they redo. I go, isn't there a way to build roads? You don't have to keep doing that. You know,
yeah, and it doesn't really cost much more, but it's. You know, the unions want to, they need to have another road to fix in 10 years. They need to fix this same road in 5 years.
Yeah.
What it comes down to.
Yeah. We were talking about man camp, and how this came about was, I remember when you were first talking about it, and it really started, you know, we could just get kids in a forge. They like heat and fire, and man, they'll get a dose fire, bend metal and pounding on stuff and everything. But to do that, you know, you can't be like five. I mean, you can do some stuff, you know, and play with it. But, I mean, you need to be able to bend. You
I got a real good them. Six-year-old project.
Yeah, that what's
they can
that?
Do. So it's quarter-inch steel rod. You know, 20-foot length of it is like $4. And basically they you cut them like a 3-foot piece or 2.5-foot piece, and they're going to just work the end of it. And Alex Steele, A-L-E-X Steele, S-T-E-E-L-M-E maybe? Anyways, he's just this guy in Great Britain. He makes really good videos that are pleasing and fun to watch. And if you do a beginner forging project, well, there's this hook that little kids can make. It's really easy because it's quarter-inch steel. It gets hot really quick. It's easy to point it. Like, you or any of us here could take and make this quarter-inch steel, this hook, in, like, you know, 10 hammer blows and, you know, maybe a minute and a half, 3 minutes. It takes a kid, you know, with dad or with me about 25, 30 minutes going at it. And then their attention span is pretty much done for, like, a 6-year-old kid. And the last summer we had probably a handful of kids that were between 6 and 9 that made this project, and they were done after the project. They wanted to go play in the sand or, you know, go chase the chickens around or do something else, but they were done. They had a half an hour of it. The thing is, it's not overwhelm them, but all those kids did was talk about this to their friends at school.
Oh, yeah.
I want to take the hook to school. I want to show it to my friends.
They'll keep that hook for the rest of their life. That'll be something they'll hang in their house. Go, yeah, I made that when I was little.
I still got a knife I made at Man Camp at Pork Fest that I got to put a handle on. Yeah. That's like a project sitting over there I got to, you know, finish.
So what I want to do is get anybody who's got a forge or a welder or just wants to build a forge, so they all know kids that need something to do, and set up a forge, have some, you know, some welding gloves. They make cyberweld.com. Derek Slopey actually bought me like $100 worth of welding gloves a couple years ago. They're on clearance. They're like $6 a pair for extra smalls, which are really nice for the kids. You know, they don't really sell because, you know, most welders don't wear extra small gloves. And the thing is you get them just begin forging beginner coat hook. Just look it up. Alex Steele's got a really good one that, like, teenagers can do, where you make 4 hooks, and then you punch holes through them, and then you use the quarter-inch rod as a rivet, and they're on a backing of plate. I don't know if you remember the kid's Joe Silvestri. You know him? Silvestri, he's from Las Vegas. His kids are Macy and Colby. They made these hooks at Pork Fest 2 years ago. Neither one of them ever done any kind of this work. I think they were like 13 and 15 or something. But the little kids look at that hook, or like one kid made a toilet paper holder, and he made a towel rack in the bathroom in Massachusetts. This was a couple years ago, probably 6 years ago now I did this with them. And the kid's a young teenager now, and his mom will send me a thing on Facebook and like, oh yeah, Joey showed, showed another one of his friends his forging project, and now I'm like, well, why doesn't he build his own forge? You just look on YouTube, you could build your own forge like elbow grease and nothing. You know, just elbow grease. You go to the scrapyard, there's junk, you know, metal laying on, especially now, it ain't worth nothing. Nobody's buying it. They're not paying anything for scrap tin or metal or any of that stuff. But anybody who has a forge should literally open up their blacksmith shop and their forge to the neighborhood kids. And what this is going to do is just build their confidence. When you build the confidence, when they're like, oh, I can make that. And the other thing it does is you go look at something in Walmart that is like forged or handmade or looks like it's handmade or maybe it's cast. But you see these metal art projects in like Hobby Lobby and things like that and Michaels.
Yeah, there are some...
It's got to be slave labor. Yeah. Because these things are like $4, and I know it would take me an hour to make it. How can it be $4, and then it got shipped halfway across the world? Well, and same reason your Nike shoes are, you know, so inexpensive compared to what goes into them, because of slave labor. So this
coming to America.
This brings a lot of, if you have confidence, you'll never be a slave because you won't have to rely on the system. Just like when you and I went down to the town a couple weeks ago and I told the guy, I'm just teaching people how to live without government.
Oh, yeah. How did that go? You heard anything from
him? I haven't heard a word from him. They said he sent me an email about within the 5 days and said that it's going to take him about a month to get the public records request to me. That's the only thing I heard.
Do you know about this? What
happened? Yeah, I've heard him talking
about
it. Yeah,
Jay, when he goes down there and he goes, I got 8 Freedom of Information requests for you. You know, I'm reasonable. You know, it's just whenever you can get to it, but I want to know these things. We don't want you to know those things. We don't want. That's not how this works.
We thought they were buried.
So there's two kinds of people who really want government. The large group of people that want government are the ones that are lacking confidence either in themselves or mankind. And most of the people who lack confidence with themselves, if you don't have confidence in yourself, you can't have confidence in your friend or your neighbor. It's just like.
What if you know this? What if you're at top, you're they, them, those, and this is exactly what you're up against? You're against a family unit. You're against mom, dad, 2.3 kids, or 1.8 now, or whatever it is. You know, you've got mom, dad, 2-3 kids, and they're teaching their kids to be self-sufficient. They're going to Girl Scout, Boy Scout. They're camping out in the woods. They're learning how to fish. They got a bow and arrow. They shot a gun. You know, they're getting gun safety training. They're doing the yada, 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 yada. That, America, was the threat. And they had to get rid of that. They had to, you know, demonize that. They had to put a stigma on it. They had to, you're not doing it right. You're the chauvinist of, you know, what's the word? Whatever. You know, we don't like it. So I'm going, this is misogynist. That's the word I'm looking for. So this is, I'm thinking, and this is one thing that Boston Tea Party did at Libertopia in San Diego one time. He goes, I don't think these people understand what's coming. You know, they're going to be, they need some men.
There's a great Cullen coming.
Great Cullen. Bob has always been going on about that for a year, man. There's a Cullen. When we went to Massachusetts last year, I'm going, who are these people? This is before any of the COVID stuff.
Right, right.
This is right before that.
Zombie food.
Yeah, this is a month or two before. I'm going, they're not going to make it, you know.
It was a few weeks from a year ago.
So what happened is Boston gave a presentation, and he was really talking to the women. And he's going, I don't know what you want, you're going to do with your soy boy, but, I mean, you need some men. And I don't know what the hell you guys are, you know, where this is coming from, or the marketing, or who's on Facebook telling you this, or the lamestream media, whatever. But you don't have men in your society. This is what's going to happen, and the women are going to have the yada, 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 yada. By the time he got done, standing ovations. I was shocked as hell. He and I went to lunch before. I go, I'm going for the entertainment. I want to see how this goes.
How long ago was this with the Boston Tea Party?
No more than 2 years ago, the last Libertopia. It was a few years ago. But, you know, he could see it coming. That's why he did Modules for Manhood. He didn't have kids. You know, he's just seen this. He's going, I don't know, but well, I got a son. I think I'm going to teach him this stuff, you know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, he has a limited ability to be critiquing a whole bunch of stuff, I mean, until you have kids. But, you know, you go in, you got to have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the plan is they freaking know how to do something. You pass this on. And out of necessity, this happens in more rural or developing countries. Of course they know how to freaking pipe, do water, pump, something.
Yeah, developing countries, they get their 5 years old out working to support the family. If somebody needs to go down and start the, you know, the diesel to water the garden, dad's busy, mom's busy. You're 5, you can pull the rope, get your ass down there and start the pump.
This is why the Mexican men, you know, I would rather my daughter, you know, be with some illegal Mexican than some hipster, cubicle working, you know, white boy.
In Arizona, do we have good luck with the Hispanic community?
They're awesome. I don't even know they're Hispanic. It's like, they're Americans, man.
Yeah,
they're Americans.
They're people.
They're people.
They're Mexicans.
Yeah.
You know, Americans. They're Mexican-Americans.
Absolutely.
And and it's because of this. They grew, and they knew, they had the self-confidence to go, there's no opportunity here. I'm going to learn.
Right.
Now, of course, then they have kids, they're working hard, they become gang members.
I know.
But it's the system. They made a mistake and turned them over to the education system. They've been better off. They just, stayed where they were at some tech.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me,
but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
You know, what's the biggest thing that makes you, you know, not afraid? And I think, yeah, I haven't really even tried, you know, I'm not afraid.
Confidence.
Confidence. Yeah, I think you pegged it, man. You know, that's going to be a thing. Who's that?
Silver Dave.
Dave, happening. So, you know, it's having the confidence to do just about anything, you know, learn how to learn. You know, that makes a big difference. So,
yeah, the most.
Excuse me while you interrupt,
thing.
Dave.
I thought
he was filming me. The confidence, I think, is confidence that you can what?
Anything.
I mean, when you say confidence is the opposite of fear, why would you say that? What's that mean?
So what I've noticed is there's this girl, Angela. I first met her when she was 9 years old. She was dropped off at the farm by her mom, who's like, you know, would rather go hang out with her boyfriend that was into drugs, for example. And these girls, there was a handful of these girls, at least 10 of them, I would have to say, more than a handful, that I've met in my life. They're dropped off as young girls. They take a couple riding lessons and end up hanging out there, and we put them to work. Well, they were afraid to drive the tractor, a lot of them. Like, for example, you know, old 1950s, whatever, tractor, barely any brakes. You know, it's got a clutch that's jumpy, and it's like, well.
Yeah, like your forklift.
Sure. So.
Stay away.
So once Angela earned the confidence, and confidence is something that's essentially you got to earn by, like, making the little coat hook when you're 6 years old, builds a lot of confidence, and with confidence comes pride. It all kind of works together. It's like, you know, a healthy body. You're going to have a healthy immune system and healthy skin and everything. At my wedding a few years ago, a handful of these girls show up. And everyone, I hadn't talked to them in over a decade, you know, because I've been doing stuff. And all these girls that basically hung out at the barn and they all learned how to drive the tractor. And, Angela was 15 years old, and I had a semi-truck we were hauling hay with, and she could ship the 13-speed in a Peterbilt at 15 years old. So could Amber. So could, several other of these girls. They could drive every truck on the farm. They could drive every piece of equipment, just like most of the people who hang out here. I show them how to use a backhoe. I show them how to use, you know, the little tractor or you know, the forklift, whatever. And once they...
No, he throws me in and says, you'll figure it out.
Well, yeah you will figure it out. And the confidence factor is just confidence constantly escalates and constantly builds. So these girls that are, they're in careers and have jobs that first off they like and they're happy with and they're making good money and they are motivated to do it. I mean, the one girl is actually, she does some kind of insurance, like underwriting, actuary type work. And she's like, yeah, I like it because, you know, I make good money and I can afford to have two horses and I can afford to have, you know, an ATV. And she's like, and I set my own schedule and I set my own rules. And she goes, I have confidence with my bosses. They don't tell me what to do. I tell them what I'm going to do. And I tell them how much they're going to pay me. And if they don't like it, I just go do something else. I don't care. And that's the attitude that, that these kids have. When I have people work for me, like one of my current partners, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm kind of preparing him because one guy that works for us, we're probably going to lose him because he's going to do bigger and better stuff. And he's going to go make a hell of a lot more money because he's at that point and his confidence is you know, he's ready to grow further as soon as he wants to. And I kind of feel he's hanging with us more to help us out than anything out of appreciation for teaching him a bunch of skills and, you know, and helping boost his confidence, for example. But when we do confidence such as grandpa taking the kid fishing. I mean, that's a huge confidence builder when a kid's come home and he caught a fish and then and then he's going to take that fish and he's going to cut it up with Grandpa, even if he ain't even old enough to hold a knife. You know, you hold a knife with him so he don't hurt himself. And he's going to be just proud that he caught this fish and he cooked this fish or he raised these hogs or whatever.
I remember the first thing project I did with my grandkids. They were, God, 3 and 4 or something like that, really young, Kaylee and Buddy, and poor Sarah. And it was building that little sandbox. And it, I could have done it in a day, and it took a month. But, I mean, you know, it was like, we got to cut the wood. We did the plans, you know, and it had a little fold-out seat kind of deal. You know, it was a kind of cool little thing. So I had to hold the impact drill, and it just and they even pulled the trigger on a Torx. You know, I go, all right, yep. Pull the trigger, you know, and it goes in. You know, do that. So it took a long time to do it. But now they know how to do it.
Yeah,
and
they,
their entire first memories are building stuff.
Yeah, yes. If you have confidence, for me, you don't live in fear. No matter what life throws at you, if you're confident, you're going, like, I got to handle
this. This is
it.
A big revelation for me right now.
It's fear.
You know, fear, what's the opposite of fear? Not being afraid. No fear, no fear. Should be, we have confidence.
Confidence.
You know?
Yeah, and we should have just... The word fear, we shouldn't be using it. We shouldn't even be thinking about it. We should be. My wife is always talking about manifesting, and you manifest. You know what you talk about, what you speak of, is what you manifest. So let's work.
Like
on
Bob
positive.
Says, fake it till you make it, kind of thing.
Yeah, let's work on these. Let's work on these. You know, positive manifestations. So, mom, dad, uncles, you know, babysitters, grandma, grandpa, whoever's involved in. The lives of young people, and there's a lot of 25 and 30 year old young people who haven't got confidence yet, and I find myself working with those guys a lot. It is way easier to teach confidence it's way easier for a 6 year old to earn confidence. First of all, you can't teach confidence. We can't give anybody confidence. It has to be earned. And when they earn their confidence, you know, their world just blossoms from there on. Even like you were talking about having a kid use the the drill or the impact driver or whatever. Well, when we had the other day, I was out here taking tires off a truck, and I got that electric impact, and I got my daughter strapped to me because I'm giving mom a break, and I just whatever work I can do around here with Cypress on her little front carrier, or we got a rear carrier.
And she's what, 8 months?
Almost 8 months. Oh. And I put that thing on, and she is like, you're taking the dog out for a walk in the morning, just so happy and gets so excited, and you know, she's ready to go me wherever. And
she's almost there. Here, hold these screws.
Well, so I got the impact
don't put
ratchet.
Them in your mouth.
I got the impact ratchet, the electric one in my hand, and it's a little noisy. It's really not that loud. It's not loud like an air ratchet, and she just wants to grab it and use it as I'm using it. So I showed her how to pull the trigger on it, and I just put my finger over her hand. It's on the trigger, and I give a little squeeze, and it shakes in her hand, and she goes, ah! It's just like, oh, she just loved it. And she wanted to just – so we took all the lug nuts off the tires, you know, off the wheels. And
see, that's the
so
investment
happy.
In children. A lot of people don't take the time to do that. And because you can get done faster, and you're just not that disposition. You're just like, man, I ain't got time for this. You know, I got – you know, that's somebody else's deal, man. I got to get stuff done. And I remember it went like this. When the kids are 5, 6 years old and I'm changing the oil or doing disc brakes or something, they're out there.
Yep.
Now, of course, it's like, I hate holding the screwdriver for dad kind of thing because I hated it too. And I'm like, hell, hold the screwdriver. Get your ass over here and do it, you know. Mm-hmm. So do like that, you know, help them, you know, show them how it's done. They get the confidence they could do it. Well, it was – I remember Donna one weekend because she didn't delegate a lot. I thought, we got 4 kids. I'm like, why are you doing anything? We got 4 kids from like – 6 to 10. Are you kidding me? So she gave me a long list, and she goes, and you can't have the kids help you. And I go, BS, I'll be done 2 hours. So it was not just for me. It was for them. And I put a lot of the investment early on so they could do it.
And Dave did some confidence building with people this last weekend that he's going to talk about.
Yeah. We'd like to hear about that.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
With?
Bob Anderson.
And Silver Dave.
Silver Dave came in.
Dave's got to go do some man camp chainsaw blade chain sharpening.
Woo! Chainsaw sharpening. Yeah.
You know, so he's got, you know, they're doing, yeah, it's getting ready for winter. He's got a lot of this wood and stuff. I'm going, wow, those would make some good logs. And he just got a mill out here to do it. And he goes, but some of them got to be a burning. You know, that's how, you know, you do your heat here. So I remember, you know, being here in the colder months. That's a thing. You know, it's like in the morning and in the evening, you're
loading up the boiler.
Yeah, loading up that thing. Have you seen that boiler deal? You know, so it's got floor radiant. Jay needs some Ernie and Bob for a month. He's got a lot of things that just need to be fit, but he gets a lot of stuff done, a lot of people doing things. But one of the things is he's, you know, we're talking the opposite of fear is confidence. And I never really thought of that. I'm like, what is the opposite of fear? Well, it's not being afraid, but I mean, why? Why aren't you afraid? You know, we're relatively concerned maybe, but I'm not worrying because we know something. We're going to be able to do it. We have the confidence that we can overcome whatever the hell it is.
Well, it's like you say, you know, sometimes every time they do something that gets you nutted up, you go, I go buy another bag of beans. That's what it is. You've decided.
I have confidence that I'm not going to starve.
I am going to be proactive in this situation. I'm not just going to curl up in the corner and let what happens happens and be scared. You know, I'm going to take action to mitigate whatever's going on.
Yeah, I had to do something. That's good. You know, and I think that was it. I was trying to alleviate my fear with, you know, confidence that I'm going to be able to feed myself.
Right.
You know, that's it. So what Silver Dave has done, all right, give your bona fides. You know, I mean, I could go, you were in the service, you're a blah, 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 special forces of something for something and somewhere it did, so, and now you're teaching people. So give me your resume here.
Thanks, Ernie. It's great to be on here. So I'm Silver Dave, and basically I was a Green Beret in the Army Special Forces. I was also an Eagle Scout, and throughout my life I've always found to seek adventure and excitement. And so recently we had, you know, I guess we'll go straight to that. Recently we
I want to talk about this a little bit.
Okay.
We were talking about the Boy Scout thing. It used to be here. Man Camp was Boy Scouts. And now they did away with the Boy Scouts and made it all over the hell they did, and it's gone.
It's now the Soy Scouts.
It's the what?
The Soy Scouts.
So the Soy Scouts are, you know, useless. But that probably was foundation for a lot of your confidence, and you went to Special Forces from that. Mm-hmm. You know, were you all merit badged up?
Yeah, well, I mean, Eagle Scout is the highest rank you can get in the Boy Scouts, and very few will do that. In my case, my father was a scoutmaster and insisted that I continued to do the merit badges and do the different modules. And, like, so, I mean, if I didn't have, you know, someone continuing to coach and encourage me, I probably wouldn't have done it. But it did give additional confidence. But when I went to the regular Army first, I was a Patriot missile system operator, and I joined the military, and I thought it was going to be a lot more adventure. I thought it was going to be more dangerous, but the type of job that I picked was more of a sort of a computer tech job. So, you know, I ended up meeting a guy who was a Green Beret medic, and, you know, he was one of my neighbors, and he heard me talk a lot about how, you know, I wasn't getting the adventure and excitement that I was looking for, and, you know, I would regularly be out running and working out, and I really cared about fitness and high performance. And so he encouraged me to try going for the Special Forces. And here's the thing. When I went to the Special Forces, you have to go and get selected. It's like a tryouts. And you go for basically a month, and about 1,000 of the guys who think they're the best of the best of the military, you know, all show up. And when it's over, 60 guys get picked. And, you know, and 100 only are left, the rest quit. And so of the remaining guys, you know, of those guys that didn't quit, only, you know, half of them get picked. And one of the things, this will totally relate to a lot of what you've been talking about with confidence, one of the things that I noticed was when in conversation with other guys, when we were first at selection, I would talk to guys, and some guys would say, well, you know, I always wondered what would happen, and I wondered what Special Forces would be like, so I figured I'd give it a try. And then there were other guys, including myself, who came, and we weren't like, we're not here to try. Like, when I went to selection, I was going to get selected no matter what. Like, whatever it took, no matter what it took, I was going to do it. Even if I had to hold the instructor hostage and say, you are going to select me, I was going to do whatever it took. And I noticed, when it was over, all the guys that got selected were the guys that had that attitude, the attitude that they were going to get picked, and nothing was going to stop them. The guys that were just there to give it a try.
Well, what did you know? A lot of the tough. I mean, is it how much? I mean, you have to have a minimum physical if I can, you know, tote this barge and lift that bag, whatever. But how much of that is really into it? I mean, if you have a, what's the minimum capability of physical versus the mental that you have to have too?
Okay, so that's a very good question that a lot of people ask. And it's very difficult to answer because what is commonly called a total man concept. First, I mean, you have to be able to run, jump, swim, climb, throw, strike, shoot. You have to be able to do these things at a much better than minimum acceptable level in the regular military. But then in the special forces, they're looking for guys who have certain characteristics and special characteristics. First, they want to make sure that you have the capability to kill something. And as you know, that's like if you can't kill like some smaller animals, you can't kill something, they're going to figure it out. They're going to know you can't kill. Most people are afraid to kill something. So, and also if you can't do basic, if you can't, you know, ruck with 100 pounds and go 30 miles, you're not going to make it. But then those things are not set, they're not prerequisites. They don't tell you whether you're going to get selected or not until the entire event is over. And they won't tell you what the minimum score for any particular event is. In fact, in most cases, they mix things up so you can't even tell whether you're in front of people or behind people. So you can't even gauge yourself to make sure you're ahead. So you really just have to perform as good as you can in a big, wide scope. Some guys were picked because they had, you know, certain features that the cadre liked and they knew were valuable. Other guys maybe didn't have, you know, some guys were maybe really good boxers and they were really, you know, very, you know, useful that way. Other guys were very smart and calculated. But everyone had to be able to overcome your fear of the dark, your fear of being cold and wet, being hungry, going through rigorous physical endurance that most people
would not
be
willing
to do.
You can't be the one, go on, just leave me here, go without me.
They want you to quit. It was a continuous, you know, who wants to quit? Anyone want to quit? Come on down. As soon as you quit, we're going to let you go to the chow hall. You'll eat cake, you'll eat cookies, you'll eat a warm meal, you'll sleep in a warm bed. Anyone who wants to quit, come on, please, quit. We want you to quit. Because they wanted any guys that weren't willing to take what it was going to mean. And, you know, so that really weeded out most people. But it brings me back to confidence. If you go into a project that you are not going to give up, you are going to get this thing done, period. And then you are pretty likely to be successful. But if you just go in to just try, you know, you're kind of like planning to not.
Well, some of the mental, almost. I mean, you know, the.
Unless it's an easy job.
The attitude, but also the intelligence factor, the ability to process information, or how much did you have to know how to do electricity at 12
years
old?
Yeah, so you have to have what the military calls a GT score of 120, which is general technical. So you have to be able to understand, like, machines, aptitude, wiring, and just.
Okay, it's hard to hear over the music, so we're going to come back. We're not done with Dave yet. This is interesting stuff, because he had a class this weekend that was confidence of building the stuff, you know, but you had to kill something. What do you have to kill? We're going to find out when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
But we're back. Yeah, we're sitting here talking about batteries, you know, the charging of doing or whatever. The one thing that Bob Anderson done before we hung out, him and Lon Weber is a good friend of mine, and Bob's been, they've been good friends since the Navy and everything. And one of the things, he has pictures of them doing this Mount Everest crap, you know, Mount McKinley or something, you know, ice trekking across and 60 miles of we'll see you in a week, kind of, maybe we'll come out the other end. And they go, yeah, we'll bring in the helicopters later, you know, that kind of deal.
Right.
So it's, you know, they're not, the, I don't know, did you guys train a whole lot? Or you just, we can walk?
No, I mean, we were, you know, young guys at the time, so we weren't really that much out of shape, but we'd invite people to go with us, right? And they'd sit there and be all like, you know, we'd show them pictures, and they're like, oh, we want to do that. And then they'd be, you know, we'd be at work, they'd be running the stairs, me and Lon are eating donuts, taking the elevator, going, yeah, whatever. And it, you know, much to what Dave was talking about, it's mental. I mean, the physical, you got to have the basic physical skills, or, you know, if you don't have that skill set, it's, you know, no need to apply. But the vast majority of overcoming it and the confidence that it takes to, you know, really go through adversity, it's in your head.
Yeah.
It's 80%.
It's called the love bus.
It's 80% in your
head. It's 80% of getting this freaking thing one step at a time. Love bus confidence. I know we can get a love bus. Man, I know exactly what you're talking about. Get over that hump. Dave, so you were talking about there's some 120 score of what the hell was that?
So to go to the Special Forces, there's prerequisites. And so you have to be able to, you know, have at least a certain minimum, you know, physical fitness score. You have to have at least a certain general technical score, which is an ASVAB test. And they basically just test to see your aptitude. GT score is general technical. So it's like, does he have a basic understanding of mechanical things or spatial things? And so, like, because if you're going to go to the Special Forces and you can't understand, like, how a gun gets put together or takes apart, or how to shoot a gun, or you can't understand how to set up a demolition charge, or
so they need a certain level of intelligence.
You can't be, yeah, you need to have a certain, so that's one of the things. But there were many, you know, you had to be able to swim, you had to be able to run, you had to be able to largely overcome your fears. Like, you had to be able to jump out of an airplane. So, like, one of the things that they tested, you know, I think a lot of it was really just testing to see if people were going to be willing to do things, even things that they were afraid of. And so, like, if you were to the Special Forces or you tried out for SF and you said you were going to go to selection, you were going to do everything, no matter what it was, and you were going to perform, even if it was something you were afraid of. And I think that's what, you know, what helped set you above, and you had that confidence. Because I was afraid of heights, but I went to airborne school. I jumped out of 55 airplanes. Well, plus, you know, some other ones for something else. But so static line jumps. And then I did, you know, you go to the special for, you know, you go to try out for the selection. And also you do this obstacle course called the Nasty Nick. And the Nasty Nick is like an obstacle course that's different than the conventional Army obstacle courses, because this is one where you really can get hurt pretty good. And if you hurt yourself, if you're like someone who really wants to get selected, well, even if you hurt yourself, you're probably not going to tell anyone you got hurt. And I give you a perfect example. There was one guy who fell off an obstacle and broke a rib, which was one issue. But another guy, he fell off an obstacle and he smashed his foot, right? And his whole foot started swelling up. And so he duct taped his foot and just wrapped his foot tight and duct taped a boot around. He had to cut his boot so his foot would fit in it. And then he re-duct taped all around the boot and made an artificial boot. And he continued for another 2 weeks and walked on, like, what later was some kind of a fractured foot. And he just ignored and muscled through and did all the you know, deep forest walks and ruck march is what it's called. But you're by yourself walking with 100 pounds for 30 miles.
He goes, I don't want to have to do this again.
Yeah. He didn't want to do it again. But so the idea is that they noticed things like that. They noticed guys that even
selected,
would get injured. Well, and a horrible thing is he actually didn't get selected. You know, he didn't even get selected, which was amazing to me. But I think there was something else with him that they did not like. But I remember I called him, and actually it was a joke between us that I said, you know, his trail name would be Fat Foot. I said, you have Fat Foot, because his foot was so fat.
So what do you think the intangibles are? Is it social skills? You know, is it getting along with people? Is it leadership things? Do they need a good follower as much as they need good leaders? I mean,
so you need to be able to do all those things. Mm-hmm. In the Special Forces, the idea of the Green Berets or the Army Special Forces, not to be confused with Special Operations, which is a bigger umbrella that also has Navy SEALs and Rangers and yada, yada. Special Forces is a force multiplier. The idea is that you're supposed to be able to go to the jungle somewhere by yourself with nothing and emerge shortly after with an army of guerrillas ready to overthrow their government. And so usually
force
it's
force multiplier.
Interest.
That was the Vietnam thing. You go up with the, you know, the natives up in the mountains and you come back and they didn't like them either. They go kick ass. So this is what we talked about as you're doing your camps and your, what do you call it? Gun church. So you do your gun church training and so on. You're a force multiplier. You're there to, you know, create other confident, you know, people that can do. So what was this project you guys did this last weekend? And then, you know, talk about Luke. You know, Luke kind of got a lot from you and learned. He got a lot of confidence out here welding, man camping and all that. Here, take a video, Ernie, of me grinding this makes lots of sparks, you know, and stuff. So we get he's getting confident, you know, out of this Brooklyn, New York thing. So Luke, you guys did together. This is the second one, at least, that you guys
third,
have done. Third.
Yep. Okay. So Luke's thing is he's come out here and he's really gung-ho about doing adventures, and he really likes to just go above and beyond what people are used to. And so working together, we've had three different events so far. And working together, we're kind of like the odd couple. Like, you know, he's wild and wants to do all these things. I want to be calculated. And somewhere in the middle, we actually develop great events. And so, like, his, you know, people that watch his station and watch, you know, wearechange.org, which is, by the way, if you're looking to read more about these events, they're called Apocalypse Survival Training. That was number 1, 2, and 3. And you can go to wearechange.org and you can read more about them. And so, you know, so Luke and I brainstormed. He said, oh, well, let's have him do this and that. I said, you can't have people just show up and, you know, shoot guns from behind walls and, you know, and do all these battle drills that Navy SEALs do. And he's like, yes, yes. And then, you know, we battled about it. But when it was all said and done, we had these events and we had people come off the street and they practiced shooting, you know, first blanks and airsoft guns, and then they used 22s. And by the time it was done, we had people that were men, that were women, that were all different ages, that had never even shot a gun before. And already they were shooting from behind cover. They were moving to covered positions. They were making tactical maneuvers that would put a major hurt on even a highly paid militarized force. And these people had just showed up and they learned so much, and they could be highly effective in a modern battlefield. So these events were great. And to fast forward, the most recent event we did.
What was the second one?
So the first one, we found water in the forest. We found a flowing water stream, and we collected it. We made a fire. We boiled the water over a fire in order to purify it. We shot bows. We shot crossbows. We shot rifles. We shot pistols. And that was the first event. We also did bug-out bag class and improvised weapons, some basic self-defense using those improvised weapons, as well as a little human anatomy to best understand how to apply those systems with the most effectiveness. And then the second event, Apocalypse Survival 2, we took it to the next level and we added the CQB, which is Close Quarters Battle, where we added shooting from walls, moving to and from a covered position, shooting multiple targets, controlled pairs, which is also called a double tap in the, you know, TV world. Finally, and we also reviewed our fire making again and some other events. And I'll wait, I guess.
Yeah. We'll do the third one. Everybody's on the edge of their seat.
They want to hear about the killing.
I want to hear about it. Kill. I want to kill. You know, that's one thing that they found out. Americans are not killing. You know, they really need to train. They learned that after World War II. You know, they got to make you a killer. How do they do that? I don't know. Do you want to be?
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And Robert Anderson and Silver Dave. Okay, so now we're into the third apocalypse training zombie of whatever, because Luke, when he moved from Brooklyn, he got, you know, this fifth wheel, and he's just like, I'm out. And he's got, hell, he's living better than he was before, a little apartment in New York, screw that, you know. So he's here, and he's like, you know, he's learning some stuff. You don't see him till noon anyway. You know, he's in there doing whatever the hell he does. But, he was going to come out of the slack of this. Of course, he didn't want to go through all the mud now. But the Luke knows how to use the internet for promotion. You know, it definitely gets his crowd on We Are Change channel and YouTube and Facebook. And all he's all Mr. Social Media. So, and he has some cool equipment that we duplicated and some capabilities of doing stuff. But I'm still, there's other, we're really drilling down on what social media is going to survive this thing. Because a lot of this is just control, you know.
Right.
And so I'm just, we'll see what's going on. But you get to the third one that you guys are going to do after you do your ouch, quit it, you know, you guys should be married. You know, and then you get to the point to where, you know, you guys are doing a third one, and what was it? What are you doing?
So at the second apocalypse training, I had brought up something that had been discussed many times over the past few years. You know, Jay and I had talked about it. a lot of times we've talked about, which is that a lot of people don't know the process of taking a live animal and turning it into food. And
Let's go to Safeway.
And that they're used to having the food has been delivered to us through big mainstream channels, that it's very centralized and very little of our own food do we produce. And so a lot of people had been asking for how to, you know, kill and harvest the meat from an animal. And so I don't know if we're ready to give it away, but basically, you know, we'd ask and people were really in a great desire. And so we thought, you know what might be a good idea is an event where people come and sleep over and, you know, make a shelter and get a live chicken or try to catch a live chicken. And then if they can catch the live chicken, then we show them how to kill it, how to gut it, how to clean it, and then cook it over a fire and sleep in the woods. And people really love the idea of that. And so, you know, Luke and I teamed up to market and advertise. We were a little behind the power curve in terms of timeline for a few things. Also not sure about his, you know, weather relocation. And, you know, we weren't sure if he was going to be available for that. But he was. And so we did Apocalypse Level 3. And we had a group of people come, and they made their own shelters using sticks.
How many people were there?
So there was about, I don't know if I should actually even say on the air, but we'll leave that
several.
Number off.
There were, we had enough.
It was it was a good number of people. In fact, it was
any more
would
have been too many.
It was in the teens. I'll give you that much number, and any more would have been too many, and any less would have maybe still been okay. But we had what I would say was like the perfect number of people, and it was really great. People came and they made their own shelters, and a lot of people were really scared, especially about, you know, killing the chicken. And the thing is that most people live their lives and eat thousands of animals, but have never even seen or participated or involved in any way in the process of taking it from its natural form and turning it into their food. So these people came, and it was a lot of people were really, they were nervous, but they were, you know, Luke and I boosted their confidence and we made sure they knew they could do it and, you know, did some rehearsals and showed them how to do the process. And each person decided they wanted to do their own chicken. Like I was going to be, if they wanted me to kill it for them and that they could clean it or as they could do as much or as little as they want. Everyone wanted to do the full thing. And each person, you know, they took a few breaths and they chopped the chicken's head off. Some of them were like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my, and they were
and
a little freaking out
like
afterwards.
Like a chicken with their head cut off.
Yeah, one chicken
freaked me out as a kid.
Yeah, one chicken got out of
it.
Got out of the person's hands after he had no head and ran away, and we had to catch him. Chicken with no head, but he didn't go far, so it was pretty neat. But the thing is, people after it was over, the next morning, several people cried and said that it was a life changing event for them, sleeping out in the woods and harvesting a chicken, and the way that we did it, we said a little thank you prayer to each chicken, and
went all Avatar on them.
And then each person got a knife and a patch at the end of the
event.
Oh,
yeah, this patch, man. What do I got to do to get a patch? I heard about this patch. Where'd you get a patch?
So,
how'd you do the patch?
Going forward, well, I ordered special patches for this event, and they're really nice patches. Maybe I'll show you one later. You know, maybe we'll even have you do a chicken, and maybe you get a patch. And
I did my patches. We did our, you know, the turkeys.
But there's more. But these patches really symbolize more than just the chicken.
Yeah, no, I'm
but
sure.
But that it was really a night of a major, you know, a real awakening for a lot of people. And going forward, I really think that doing these events where people learn a skill and they get a patch they can sew on their jacket or put
well,
on
how
a
many
sash,
were there any women
like,
or children?
You know, so there were women and there were men. There were no children. There were all everyone was over 21, but all different age ranges aside from that, and a mix of men and women. It was a wonderful group, and people were really liberty centric.
Where were they from?
They were largely from. There were a few from local area, and then there were mostly from New York City and New Jersey area.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, that's it, because I've known Luke for a long time, since he was a kid doing 9/11 stuff back in the day. And he's always gone through his phases of whatever. But I've never seen him change more than since he's been here. That really made a big difference. I mean, he's traveled the world. He's been all kinds of crazy Somalia, blah, 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 blah. But never, you know, and it's his confidence thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm really seeing, he got into it. Anya, you know, a friend of his that was up here for a while.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I really liked her. She's from Russia. Yeah, I remember I was up at Derek's, and he goes, yeah, Anya helped me build that table or weld that. I'm like, yes, she did, you know. And so that's what's missing in this country, by intent.
By intent.
By intent. We need to counter this. This is a thing. Gun church, a man camp. You know, I'm thinking, and what did they do? They closed the schools and left them out, and you got to, you know, learn how to do stuff on your own, your parents. I'm like, oh, you guys screwed up now.
Yep.
So here's the thing, and I want to make sure I get this out since I know we probably don't have much time. Mm-hmm. Basically, going forward, it seems a lot of us here in the community are interested in offering different types of training and skill building and confidence building. And going forward, you know, I plan to offer more events like land navigation and cold weather survival.
Awesome.
And more of these other events. And so to see more events, you can check out, wearechange.org may post some of the joint events Luke and I do. You can also look at gunchurch.org to see different events that are listed. Going forward, there will be more events. And finally, right now, because of the evil government has shut down so many different places where people can get together, where they can see each other's faces, where they can have fun. And that is where there is a drought. There is an opportunity. And so for those of us who can seize the opportunity to give people what's been taken away from them by the system and offer that interaction with other people, the skill building, the fun events. And so I think this is our opportunity to do that now. And there's a demand for it because of the shortage. And so let's let the state help us by why they created a vacuum.
Well, just we can send them a thank you card. And plan the next event. You know, I can see, you know, Bob and I have been talking about this for decades. Bob and I have known each other since like 93.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, so we've been doing, we were young guys doing all this stuff, you know, like your age. You know, we've been through this. We knew that, but I never put a word to it. It's just, you know, confidence has been, you'll get a skill set and learn. And that's what the Love Bus is. It's on activism. It's how to do, I got silkscreen supplies to do. We hadn't done that one yet. Silkscreen, mass produce of whatever. The digital projection of creating your stencils or whatever, the laser method, where the material is, there, you will be able to express yourself, and they can't stop it until they try, and then you get more reasons to do it. So it's, you know, we all have our, you know, little thing. So yeah, I would like to, yeah. Well, that's kind of what I'm doing anyway. I'm just doing it around the country and around the world because, you know, screw them. But it's the confidence to be able and have the skills to do it. But you can't express yourself if you're dead from starvation.
That's bad.
I wish to express myself as soon as I have this here sandwich.
Just going to keep breathing in and out. We'll outlast them.
And that's one thing that we were talking about. I don't need to beat them. I just need to outlast them. They're going to fall of their own. They have to feed off of us or something. There's some weird stuff coming. But Silver Dave, Green Beret, hooked up with Luke Radowski, media guy. You know, Bob, Derek, our wives, Jay. I am so filled with confidence. We're going to be okay. Freedom always wins in the end, but it gets really messy.